Support for the Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the Morning Show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. For most of the hour, we're going to be talking politics. We have two very special guests, and WGTD News Director Dave McGrath and I flipped a coin earlier this morning to determine the order in which these two interviews will air. We're going to begin today's morning show with Pat Garrett, who is Communications Director for the State Republican Party of Wisconsin. In part two of today's morning show, you're going to be hearing from Martha Lanning, who is chairperson of the State Democratic Party of Wisconsin. So we hear from the Republicans and the Democrats, and again, a flip of the coin has determined the order by which these two interviews will air. And we appreciate both of our guests making time in very busy schedules to accommodate the invitation from WGTD's morning show. Here's part one. I am spending this portion of WGTD's morning show speaking with Pat Garrett, who is Director of Communications for the State Republican Party here in Wisconsin. And, of course, it is a very, very busy time for anybody who is involved with either of the two major political parties in our country, and particularly with the major conventions right around the corner. So I'm very, very excited to be able to speak with Pat Garrett for the next few minutes about the work that he and his colleagues are doing right now. Pat Garrett, we welcome you to the morning show.
Hey, thanks for having me on today.
Good. I'm glad to have this conversation. I hope it will be the first of several that we'll be able to have in the coming months. So just quickly, how long have you been Director of Communications for the State Republican Party? And can you just say a word about your path to that position?
Sure. So I've been here since November of 2015. I graduated from Marquette University a few years ago. I worked in New Mexico to reelect Governor Susana Martinez. And then I served as the communications director for the New Mexico Republican Party, and then I came back here to Wisconsin to take the role I'm in now.
So you're originally from Wisconsin?
Well, so I was born in Illinois, but then I spent years in Wisconsin after I graduated from Marquette University.
Got it. So is it Packers or Bears?
Well, actually, in Racine, it's pretty split. So,
fair enough.
I'm a Bears fan, so we'll just go there.
Some of my best friends are Bears fans, and I used to live in Chicago, so I have some affection for them as well. On to weightier matters, namely, first of all, the work that you and your colleagues are doing at the moment in the nuts and bolts of the day-to-day work there at the State Republican Party. What are you busy doing right now?
Well, that's a great question. So the Wisconsin GOP's first priority is to provide a grassroots organization to all of our candidates who are on the ballot this November. And so that means campaign offices across the state. That means staff across the state. Those staff are then organizing community captains. Those community captains organize volunteers who are on the ground every single day. These offices are in Racine. They're in Milwaukee, La Crosse, Wausau, Green Bay. Really, we're in every corner of the state. Our presence on the ground is growing every day as we move closer to November. And we've also been on the ground since early 2015, preparing to win in this November. So we've been on the ground for a long time. If you want a full list of our offices, you can go to wishgop.org/volunteer. But as a state party, you know, we're touting a very impressive, robust grassroots operation, and that's really been built because of all this action Wisconsin has seen over the past 5 years. It's really incredible to see where the Wisconsin Republicans stack up compared to other state parties across the nation, and we're very proud of where we are and proud of this grassroots activity. We've even seen Democrats in Wisconsin take notice. A couple months ago after the April 5th election, you had Democrat State Senator Kathleen Vinehout. She's a longtime Democrat state senator. She's looking to run for governor. To just quote her, she has said here, you know, Republicans have done a very good job getting people to the polls. They've been working on a neighborhood leadership training program. We need to be doing that, saying we as the Democrats. It's curious to me that techniques used by Democrats in the 1970s and 1980s in terms of ward-based organizing, those techniques are being perfected by the high-tech statewide GOP. So the Democrats even understand what we've been doing, and it's actually building this, again, this grassroots operation. We're modeling a lot of it. Actually, you know, it's some of the community organizing that we've seen from two successful elections for President Barack Obama. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts of what we do every day, is building this robust grassroots operation.
Mm-hmm. And you keep using that term grassroots. So it obviously is, in a sense, the heart and soul of what you are proudest of in terms of the work that you're doing right now.
Absolutely. And then I also do want to mention, like, we provide support to campaigns in other ways, such as messaging. And I think yesterday's a great example. You know, we held a press conference calling on Senator Feingold to condemn Hillary Clinton's actions and her not being honest with the American people. You know, everything that was coming alight with that email scandal, we wanted Feingold to finally, you know, condemn her actions on that. So we provide some messaging support, but mainly we're giving grassroots support to all our candidates up and down the ballot. And it's a really exciting time, actually. As you said, it's a busy time. Convention's coming up for both sides, and we're really excited.
The Democratic Party, of course, is aiming to reclaim some of what they have lost over the recent years in the state legislature, state legislature. So for the Republican Party, it is, in a sense, an opposite assignment, that is to retrench, to remain. Does that feel different? I mean, is there a sort of special challenge that is involved in attacking that kind of assignment versus, in a sense, going on the attack as, in a sense, the underdog?
Sure. So, you know, I do want to mention in 2012, we were in a similar situation. We were heading into a presidential year with majorities that we had to protect in the state legislature. So for those, you know, listening, that's the state House and the state Senate. Those are two separate bodies. And we had a majority in both in 2012 and held on to those majorities following the 2012 elections. We plan to do so again this November. I think voters understand, especially here in Wisconsin, that Republicans are driving reform. We not only turned the state around from the years after Jim Doyle, but we're driving this Wisconsin comeback. Like, unemployment is down. More people are working than ever before here in Wisconsin, and that's a great thing. And then I want to talk really quick on what Wisconsin Republicans have done in the legislature. You know, under the governor's leadership, we've really led on some strong bipartisan reforms. We're talking, and this is just lately, so this is more recent that these legislators will be running on this year. And I'm talking about the HOPE agenda, which is, again, helping like the real concerns of people in every neighborhood across the state, looking at tougher penalties for those that commit crimes against children, as well as tougher penalties for DWI. And so a lot of things that both parties can get behind, and it's really been under Republican leadership that these things have been getting done. And so we're very confident that when the voters take a look at what Republicans in the legislature have done, how they've turned the state around, how they were driving the Wisconsin comeback, and how we're looking, how we're leading on even bipartisan reforms, like, we're going to be reelected this year. I have no doubt.
Are there particular races about which you are especially concerned or maybe especially excited, and when it comes to the state legislature?
You know, there's a few state assembly, state senate races across the map that kind of go back and forth, right? We see them as they're called swing districts. You know, the state senate district in the 18th, for example. But again, like, when you look at the agenda that Republicans have offered, Democrats haven't really offered anything other than we're not Scott Walker. And I think we've seen that for so many years that just doesn't work. I think even their own side are probably looking for them to start offering some solutions on problems facing everybody here in Wisconsin. And so I would like to, you know, I'm just excited to hear this debate happen again, where we're going to run on our platform of reform, and we'll see Democrats just trying to tear that down. And that's probably what November is going to look like again, and that's why I'm confident that we're going to hold these majorities.
Any thoughts on the U.S. Senate race, hotly contested with incumbent Ron Johnson, and a challenge from the former incumbent, Russ Feingold, whom you've already mentioned in this conversation? Any observations about how that race is being waged thus far?
Well, I think hotly contested might even be an understatement this year. It's definitely a very big race between the two. You know, Ron Johnson, we see him, and he is a friend and ally to Wisconsin. He's someone who's come from business. He's come from manufacturing. He's come from creating jobs. And that may, you know, he's the citizen legislator in this race. He's the citizen legislator in the U.S. Senate. He's bringing what we would call a common sense, you know, Wisconsin approach to government. You know, he's trying to take on the status quo we've seen in Washington where people can't really get things done. And we're looking in contrast to someone like Senator Feingold. He was rejected by Wisconsin in 2010 because we think his independence vanished. And when we get closer to November, I think things are going to become very clear. 2 decades in Washington transformed Feingold from a maverick to someone who will sell out his principles to advance his career. Everything that this guy has said he was going to do or that he was going to run on, he's waffled on it and changed. And I think when people take a hard look, you're going to have someone who's always been who he was, Ron Johnson, a Wisconsin job creator looking to reform that status quo in Washington, against someone like Russ Feingold, who, you know, ran as this guy who's going to be an independent, ran as someone who's going to be an independent. But as we see with a lot of politicians who go to Washington, that Washington status quo changes them.
The Republican Party has, of course, a major convention coming up in just a moment in which their presumptive nominee, Donald Trump, is expected to be named their nominee. And then thus will ensue what promises to be one of the most spirited presidential races in recent history. What are your thoughts about this highly charismatic yet divisive figure, Donald Trump? And what is the challenge in terms of achieving the right, effective kind of message when the candidate is such a figure?
Sure. I mean, like, I think you, you know, you kind of hit the nail on the head here in terms of, like, highly charismatic, again, hot, and this is a hotly contested race as well, right? We have Donald Trump, who is new to politics, right? We are new to being a candidate for office. But then you have someone like Hillary Clinton, who I think shares a lot of those qualities of Russ Feingold, which I just described. You know, Hillary Clinton has just this aura of insider, aura of spending so much time in politics. And you look at what happened here on April 5th. If you look at Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, I mean, Ted Cruz won, right? And then Donald Trump came in second here on our side. But then on the Democrat side, Bernie Sanders, you know, beat Hillary Clinton pretty resoundingly. And I think what that's saying is Wisconsin voters want someone from the outside. They don't want someone who's just been in the system, who is the system for so long. And I think we're going to be able to tap into that again in November, just like we did in April 5th. And what's going to help, again, part of the strategy is that ground game I was talking about. And it's turning out our voters. It's persuading the ones that we can persuade. And we're incredibly confident. It's just such an exciting cycle, and I've been really just enjoying every day I'm here at this job.
Right. So how does one go about addressing Republicans who have a problem with Donald Trump? What are some of your strategies in trying to sway them to, in a sense, give up their misgivings and go with Mr. Trump, who is, you know, by all accounts, one of the most unconventional major party presidential candidates we've ever seen. What is your strategy in terms of bringing the doubtful into the column of believers?
Sure. column of believers. I like that. I think it's really just it's showing what's at stake in terms of what direction do we want to go. I think a lot of Americans can agree that how things are going right now nationally, while things might be going well in a good direction here at the state and nationally, things aren't going that well. So it's convincing, you know, it's convincing people how Hillary Clinton is the wrong direction and Donald Trump would then be the right direction. At the same time, you know, it's the values that we value here in Wisconsin. I think that's making sure that Washington doesn't overstep on what we want to do here in Wisconsin, and that's innovate, and that's, you know, invest in our own communities, invest in our own future, where we see too often Washington kind of steps in that, and we see too much of this Washington mentality, and I think that's really going to be with even Republicans and some independents and Democrats too. It's the Washington values of Hillary Clinton, and it's the Wisconsin values or the values that we here hold in Wisconsin for someone like Donald Trump or other candidates as well on our side.
So what would be, in your view, Donald Trump's strengths that he would bring to the office of president?
Well, the biggest things, I think, are making sure that our borders are secure, making sure that jobs are coming back here to the United States or staying here in Wisconsin. Like, you know, the economy is probably a big concern on everyone's mind. It's a concern on my mind. And so I think the economy, as well as, you know, just a stronger national security. I think we can agree that President Obama's national security policy isn't working. We need a change from that. You know, what we've seen with Hillary Clinton is she's going to double down on the president's foreign policy agenda. And I think when you look at her email scandal as well, it just shows, I mean, it just shows how she jeopardized national security by using a private email server. And so there's a lot there. It's a lot of those. It's those qualities about Hillary. It's the doubling down on Barack Obama, and it's the fact that Donald Trump will represent a break from that. And I think that's why we're seeing such this groundswell of support for outsiders, like I said, in Wisconsin on April 5th. You know, we saw Bernie Sanders defeat Hillary Clinton, and we saw Ted Cruz and Donald Trump win. And both of those guys are outsiders. Like Ted Cruz, we can all agree, he's been in the U.S. Senate just like Bernie Sanders has. Neither of those two candidates, while they're U.S. senators, are seen as insiders or part of the Washington establishment, while Hillary Clinton obviously is part of the Washington establishment. She is the Washington establishment.
We have heard about how Mr. Trump is not only an unconventional candidate in terms of his experience and so on, but the fact that he has run his presidential campaign quite unconventionally. Has that had much impact on the state Republican Party organization, the way in which the Trump campaign has been waged in terms of size of staff and the way in which that campaign has been organized, or not very significantly?
You know, we get that question a lot, and it really does tie back to the fact that we're in good shape here in Wisconsin because of all the work that we've done investing early on. So that's why I think we've been able to mitigate the unconventionalism, because we are here with a strong grassroots operation that's been in place since early 2015, and we're getting help from the RNC, we're getting help from the Trump campaign. You know, all of our candidates are fully integrated into our grassroots operation. So we're not really seeing, you know, this problem I feel like that other states may be seeing, or, you know, it's just, we get these questions a lot, and like, I just don't see that here in Wisconsin. Our organization is just very well off, and we are very confident in our ability to win in November. And at the same time, like, Wisconsin Republicans have a lot to be united about. You know, we had Governor Walker and the Republicans in the legislature rack up success after success in the legislature, bringing home just huge policy wins for the state. And so we have a lot to be united about. We're a different thing over here in Wisconsin.
Last quick question. There are plenty of Americans on both sides of the political aisle who are quite fed up with the intense divisiveness of the political landscape right now. I wonder if you and your staff think about that very much, and about how one balances sort of attention to one's own fervent base versus also trying to reach out to, let's say, more moderately minded Americans. Again, this is on both sides of the aisle, who really do not respond well to the negativity that we see to such a large extent. How do folks in your line of work wrestle with that reality?
Well, I think it's going back to touting the things that both parties came together on. I go right away to what Republicans in the state legislature with the HOPE agenda, these tougher penalties on DWI. You know, things that needed to get done, or things that Republicans are working on, Democrats came with us on. And, like, there's ways that we can, you know, those are examples of agreement. And so maybe it's talking about those more. We talk about them, you know, our Republican candidates will be talking about them. And yes, we're at a time where we're in the middle of an election right now. So, you know, the divisive rhetoric that you're referring to is just going to be more prominent because it is an election. But at the same time, like, we have a lot of things that we can tout that both parties can get behind.
Pat Garrett is Director of Communications for the State Republican Party of Wisconsin. Pat Garrett, thank you for joining me today on The Morning Show. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
And the time is exactly 8:29. You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. Again, it was by a flip of the coin that we heard first from the Republican side. And now for part two of today's Morning Show, and a guest from the State Democratic Party of Wisconsin. I'm really honored to be able to spend the next few minutes of WGTD's Morning Show with Martha Lanning, who was elected chairperson of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin back in June of last year. And it has obviously been a very, very busy year or so that Martha Lanning has been on the job. And, of course, her responsibilities continue to be very, very crucial as this year proceeds with hotly contested legislative races, and, of course, a very hotly contested presidential race, very much on everybody's mind. And I'm very, very pleased that I can spend a few minutes talking with Martha Lanning about what she is doing and the goals of her party and what is likely stretching ahead over the next few months. Martha Lanning, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
Well, thanks so much for inviting me, Greg. It's my pleasure.
Glad we can have this conversation. By the way, do you come at this with sort of a lifelong interest in our political life, or are you a relative newcomer to the world of politics?
Well, I've been a Democrat my whole life. I've been was raised in a Democratic family, and the reason I'm so proud to be a Democrat is because we really believe in ensuring that everybody in our community has an opportunity to work hard and, you know, build their American dream. And we want to be sure that kids have a quality educational opportunity no matter what zip code they live in. We want to be sure that people who've got a great idea on a business plan, you know, can get the funds they need to create that great new business for our community that will offer jobs and do great things. And, you know, we want an economy that works for everyone, not just billionaires. And so I'm really proud to be working as the chair of the party to ensure that we're electing more Democrats so that we can move Wisconsin ahead.
What are you personally, well, you and your inner circle, what are you busiest with right now? What is the most important sort of day-to-day nuts and bolts task at hand?
Well, two things. One is building our field campaign. We are so far ahead on that. We're doing a wonderful job getting out staff all over the state of Wisconsin that is reaching out and bringing together our grassroots activists and our volunteers to get behind our candidates and so that we have that network around them. But then secondly, I've been really busy at building the resources. So we have a candidate service director and a red to blue coordinator here now in the state of Wisconsin for the Democratic Party that is ensuring that every single one of our candidates across the state of Wisconsin has the training they need to run a really effective campaign and to be reaching out in their community and talking with their community about the issues that are important to them.
What are the prospects for some significant inroads being made in terms of legislative races within the state of Wisconsin?
Well, and I think that's key, is that in order to stop this really repressive Republican agenda that has utterly failed, everything that's been happening, they promised us all these jobs, they weren't created, they've created the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which has been a disaster, has an important role, but, you know, giving out over $100 million in loans to people who didn't even fill out paperwork, I mean, just a lot of bad things are happening, and the only way that we can stop what's happening is we have to elect Democrats so that we can take back the state Senate, or the state assembly. Now, the state Senate, to do that, we need three races, and we have some really good candidates running. Like we have over in the 12th against Tom Tiffany, we have Brian Van Stippen. We have a wonderful candidate, Mandy Wright is in the assembly. We have Diane O'Dean, and we have a primary going over in the Oshkosh area with Mark Harris and John Lemberger. So we have some really great races there where people are running on ensuring our kids get that education, ensuring that we have good paying jobs that people can pay their bills with and take care of their family, and that's what everybody deserves. In the assembly, we've got some great candidates running also, like Mandy Wright and Jeff Wright. They're not related, but some really great candidates across the state. We need to pick up a lot more seats in the assembly, but this is the year that that could happen. With Donald Trump at the top of the ticket, people are really frightened by what the Republicans have created. And so they're very concerned about it, and they're really paying close attention. And I think when they look at what Democrats are running on, they're going to choose to vote for Democrats this year.
What about the U.S. Senate race between incumbent Ron Johnson and his opponent, former incumbent Russ Feingold? What role does the state Democratic Party play in that sort of race in supporting former Senator Feingold?
Well, when you have a candidate like Russ Feingold, you know, you get behind him because, you know, it's a big sacrifice to put yourself out there to run for office. And Russ is just amazing. He has traveled to every single county in the state of Wisconsin twice. He is listening to the people, which is what I think people are really just fed up with, politicians who don't really care to listen to what they want. They're just listening to the big money. And like Ron Johnson, who just is hanging out in Washington, D.C. with his cronies, you know, they want someone who's standing up for them and making decisions that represent their beliefs. And that's what Russ is doing, is he's talking about ensuring that people, you know, who work hard can earn enough money to pay their bills. And he's very concerned about the people that are really struggling. He's worried about why kids that are, you know, getting out there and getting that education so that they can provide the services our communities need, that are they're being saddled with so many loans that they can't afford to buy a car or get out there and buy a house, which helps our economy. So Russ is really addressing the issues that are so concerning to us, and we're thrilled to be getting behind him.
There is, of course, a presidential race that everybody is talking about. A couple of questions come to mind. One of them, of course, is that on the Democratic side, we had two compelling figures in Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And although now Mrs. Clinton is the presumptive Democratic nominee, Wisconsin is one of the states where, of course, many, many Democrats were in the Bernie Sanders camp. What role does the state Democratic Party play in terms of this particular dynamic as the Democratic presidential convention nears? What role do you play in terms of sorting out those supporters and galvanizing them to be behind whoever the nominee ultimately is?
Well, my job is to unite them. I mean, we all – the thing about that I love about the Democrats is – that, you know, yes, we had a primary and people got behind their candidate and they really believed in them, but we have common values. You know, we believe that everybody deserves an opportunity to succeed. We believe in fairness and respect, and that, you know, in local control. We have these values that unite us. So that's what makes it easier for us to come back together, and it's that's happening. You know, a lot of people, you know, saying, oh my goodness, that this is a tough year. But if you look back at the Marquette poll back in 2008, over 50% of Hillary Clinton supporters said they wouldn't support President Obama, but yet he won here with a landslide. So, and this year, you know, it's only in the 20s percentage, like 25% said that they were concerned. So it just, this is normal. This happens. And we just need to keep talking about our values and what we stand behind. And as we unite, which is our slogan here, unite, vote, win, we're going to ensure that the next president of the United States is a Democrat. Because the alternative, you know, for the Republican Party, they're really having a tough trouble uniting, because you can't unite behind someone who doesn't have your values. And Donald Trump, he's sexist. He's racist. He said just absolutely horrible things that Republican leaders are really struggling with. And so it is going to be difficult to unite that party, because people don't want to vote for someone who's against their values.
Back to the question of Mrs. Clinton versus Mr. Sanders. What are some specific things that that you and your staff are doing towards the goal that you just mentioned about trying to bring as united a front as possible into the convention and ultimately into the presidential race itself come November? What are sort of your highest priorities, or maybe your most important strategies towards that end?
Well, we're offering respect and celebrating what both of these candidates did, that they were both outstanding candidates and talking about issues both would have made great presidents. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is that we're bringing all of our delegates together, you know, and we're having some gatherings to bring people together to celebrate what we all share. And, you know, we're already seeing people talking about how, you know, they just want to be sure that we have a Democrat in the White House. So people who, you know, were really strong Bernie Sanders supporters, they know that the important thing here is that we have a Democrat in the White House. And so we're giving people the time that they need and to let them make that choice, because we know, again, as I said, our values are what are going to unite us and bring us back together.
As many people know, there had been planned what would have been a dramatic appearance by President Obama with Mrs. Clinton, I believe, in Green Bay, in what would have been the first joint appearance during this campaign cycle. And that event, of course, was canceled, I believe, primarily because of the tragic events down in Orlando, Florida, if I remember correctly.
That's correct.
Is there the possibility that we will see a similar joint appearance within the borders of Wisconsin at some point in the future? I should think you're hoping so.
The president's schedule is so busy, we don't hear until, you know, really last minute, a week before or something. But I am certain that that we will be having the president joining us between now and November. And we saw by you know, his first appearance campaigning for Secretary Clinton, you know, how strongly the president is behind her, because he knows that she is the only candidate that is going to be able to continue his great success. You know, 75 months of straight economic growth. It's incredible.
We're speaking with Martha Lanning, who is the chair of the Democratic Party of the state of Wisconsin. She was elected to that position back in June of 2015. Martha Lanning, it is a very divisive, divided political landscape in which we find ourselves, of course, right now in Wisconsin and in all over the country, of course. And there are a couple of things going on there, including sort of the nature of our political discourse at the moment is pretty raw and tough talking in both directions. And I wonder if you could just say a word about the challenge of shepherding the Democratic Party at such a moment. How do you weigh the concerns of the party's core faithful and versus the concerns of maybe more moderate voters who really don't like this divisive atmosphere? I should think it really is a challenge in terms of trying to figure out how to craft rhetoric and craft statements and platforms and so on to speak to that kind of population and to sort of weigh what to say and how to say it. Can you just speak to that?
My experience has been over the last year that when we're talking about people in our community and the opportunities that they're being denied, or the restrictions that we're putting on them, it's when we talk about those issues that we really can unite everyone, that people can get together. I mean, everybody in the Democratic Party believes that we need to invest in education and the cuts to the universities, you know, $250 million being cut out of our universities is putting not only the future of our kids at risk, it's hurting our economy. Our universities are a huge engine within our economy, and because they help to create new business. They're the birthplace of that. And we've dropped to 50th out of 50 states in entrepreneurism, and that's an example of that. So when I go out there and I talk about those issues, we just have really rich discussions, whether you're, you know, a moderate Democrat or, you know, a far-left Democrat. You know, we have that commonality that we believe in investing in education. We believe that we should have an economy that works for everyone, not just the billionaires. And people are fed up by the Republicans here in our state, you know, giving out a tax break to millionaires, which has not to manufacturers. It actually came out to be over $21 million in tax credits given to 11 people, just 11 people. And we haven't seen that eliminating taxes on manufacturers has done anything to help grow manufacturing jobs in Wisconsin. It's growing at the same rate it was before this tax break. And people really on both sides have a tough time understanding why would we do that and then at the same time cut education funding to our universities. You know, we could have made the manufacturers continue to pay their fair share of taxes and ensured that our universities were strong. So I just really center in on let's talk about the issues. And when we do that, we're very united. Hmm.
What about the temptation of talking about Donald Trump? I wonder if that is also a tricky matter in terms of to what extent he is a target that needs to be or deserves to be attacked versus what you were just saying, the idea of sticking to issues and not allowing this campaign to descend still further into kind of the dark campaigning that we were talking about before. What are your feelings about the best way to proceed in this respect?
I think there's two things here. Is when you have people who have common values or that we're standing up with common values, you talk about the issues. But Donald Trump doesn't have our values. I mean, Donald Trump is a con, and he has preyed upon people. He literally has made a statement saying that he wanted the housing crisis to happen. And when he was asked about it, just over a month ago probably it was, you know, his comment, quote-unquote, was, hey, I'm a businessman. You know, these are the kind of things that do we really want to have a president of the United States who has no problem morally, you know, watching people lose their housing, lose their life savings, but he made money off of it, so that's all he cares about? Do we want them to be president of the United States? You know, he preyed upon people with his Trump University. He's being sued by all kinds of people. He's declared bankruptcy and left small businesses, you know, holding the bag for his bad decisions. He's just a con. And that's why I don't have any problem talking about those things, because he does not have the values that a president of the United States should have. And that's why I want people to know that and know what they're getting. And that's why I strongly feel that Hillary Clinton would be the next president of the United States.
Tell us why you feel so passionately that Hillary Clinton should be our next president. What do you think are the most important qualities that she would bring to that office?
Well, I agree with President Obama. I don't think there's ever been anybody that is more qualified. I mean, she was the first lady and had a, you know, ringside seat of exactly what happens in the presidency, and did a lot of work and brought healthcare to an incredible number of children here in America. She then moved on to be a United States Senator and experienced being a part of Congress and making decisions on the, you know, there, and that gave her an incredible number of skills. And then she went on to be Secretary of State and dealt with the whole foreign relations. I mean, Hillary Clinton has the knowledge and the ability to be an outstanding president and to ensure that we deal with very difficult decisions that we're being dealt right now on, you know, this terrorist issue and on foreign relations. She has, no one can get near the skills that she has to be able to deal with those things. And she has the right beliefs on investing in education and ensuring that our kids move forward and doing things the right way.
So you will be at the Democratic Convention, of course.
Absolutely. I'm really excited about going.
What do you think is going to happen there? What are your expectations for what this convention will be?
I think it's going to be just historic. I mean, we're going to elect for the first time in a national party a woman to run for president. And I think, again, bringing together people who believe, like we all believe, that we want to protect Social Security. We want to ensure that seniors, you know, have that security. We want our kids to have the opportunity for the American dream. Just talking about things that we all stand for and hearing people, some of our greatest leaders, standing for those issues, it's going to be quite a moment. And I think in comparison, you know, the Republicans, people don't even want to go because they're so embarrassed by their top candidate. So no one's embarrassed by what's happening in the Democratic Party. We're thrilled to have such great leaders that wanted to be our president. We now have our presumptive nominee, and we're all going to get behind her and be sure she's the next president.
Martha Lanning, chair of the Democratic Party of the state of Wisconsin, I appreciate you taking time in your schedule, and we look forward to having some further conversations with you in the coming months. Thank you so much.
Anytime, Greg. Thanks so much.
And the time is 8:48 here on WGTD. We're going to finish out the hour with something besides politics. Let's turn to the archives and to a memorable conversation I was able to record some years ago with the great Bob Newhart. And the occasion of this conversation was the publication of his memoir, I Really Shouldn't Be Doing This. So here's a portion of that conversation to finish out today's morning show. WGTD is actually located right between Milwaukee and Chicago. So our listeners are especially interested to hear all that you have to say about the wonderful city of Chicago, with whom you have such a close relationship. One thing in particular I think is especially interesting is when you say something about Chicago audiences. You say Chicago audiences just can't be fooled by a stand-up comic. In other cities, people sort of laugh where they're supposed to laugh, but people in Chicago only laugh when something is funny. Any idea why that is, and also how you've experienced that yourself?
I don't know why it is. I just know it is. I know that you can't fool a Midwest audience, as you can fool other audiences, say a San Francisco or a New York audience, because there are certain buzzwords that, like Kafka, you know. If you can work Kafka into it, you generally, a New York audience will laugh. Also putting on airs. People always say, well, you seem like pretty much like you were, you know, when you first started out. And I said, well, we have this thing in the Midwest about putting on airs, you know, and don't act like something you're not, you know.
So you think that's part of why you've sort of stayed so true to yourself, that because Chicago audiences just wouldn't have tolerated much of anything else?
Well, that, and I had a wife who kept me grounded and never let me really get too full of myself.
Very good. I know the feeling. you have also, among other things, given some of the credit for your particular wonderful, refreshing brand of comedy to some of the work which you did in law school, and in particular, an appreciation for the precise word. Tell us a little more about that.
Well, for instance, in the best example I can think of in a routine, which is one of the original routines that I started out with, submarine commander, and he's it's a routine on a man who, especially in service or in a large corporation, it's an example of the Peter principle. He has advanced fully two or three levels beyond his competency, and he's in charge of the submarine, and he's recalling for the crew this memorable trip that they're just ending, and he's congratulating them on the 2 minutes that they just cut off the record for a surfacing, firing at the towed target, and then resubmerging, and he's congratulating them. It's a new record. They took 2 minutes off the previous record, and he said at the same time, I don't slight in any way the contribution made by the men we had to leave on deck. I think they had a lot to do with the 2 minutes we were able to cut off the record, and I doubt if any of us will soon forget their somewhat stunned expressions as we watched them through the periscope. So I think slight is just the right word, and stunned expressions is just the right word for. I think I took that with me from law school. It's one of the few things I ever took from law school.
Well, we're glad that you did. You also talk about how comedians have to be at heart anti-authority, subversive in some sort of way. It's interesting for you to say that because, of course, those probably aren't the first couple of terms which most people would gravitate towards in trying to describe you or your brand of comedy. I mean, other people have been more obviously subversive. In what way has the work you've done been subversive in the way you're talking about?
Well, it's in there. It's very subtle, but it's in there. For instance, when I did the retirement party, and that was really based on my experience when I was an accountant, and I worked for an insurance company, and because someone I first did that, and someone wrote me a letter, and they said, they were offended that I was making fun of Charlie Bedloe, who was receiving the watch after 50 years with the company, and who was he was Blotto all the time, and I wrote back and explained to him that I wasn't making fun of Charlie. I was making fun of the system that made him get Blotto every day to get through the day. That's the only way he could get through the day. And again, in the submarine commander, it's making fun of the large corporation or the military, and then Abe Lincoln, of course, is making fun of a revered former president. So there is that element. It may be understated, but it's in. I think it's in almost every routine.
We're speaking with Bob Newhart about his wonderful new memoir called "I Shouldn't Even Be Doing This" and other things that strike me as funny. You talk about how, especially in the first years of your career, you were writing almost all of your material in a vacuum, not really knowing if it was ever going to be performed. Do you think that was a helpful thing in a sense, that you were writing it in that way? Did it give you maybe a certain sort of a freedom?
Yeah, I suppose it was, Greg. It was. Ed Gallagher and I had a syndicated radio program, which was eminently unsuccessful. We finally wound up costing us money to do it, and then Ed got an offer for a job in New York, so I was kind of on my own. Either I had to find another partner or do it as a single. And even though I had no outlet for it, I would see something and it would strike me funny, and I had to write it down. I had to get it down on paper before I forgot it. Even though I never knew where I was going to ever have a chance to perform it.
Hmm. Those routines, some of them at least, came to light and were shared on PBS in the wonderful American Masters special they did about you. That must have really felt pretty cool, that a show that devotes itself to people like Leonard Bernstein devoted its resources to celebrating you and your career.
Exactly, and it was. And I don't know that it was so much a salute to me as it was a salute to the role of comedy and the role that comedy plays in our lives, and how important comedy is to our lives.
Absolutely. You talk in wonderful detail in your memoir about that marvelous show which debuted in the 1970s, which so many of us enjoyed and have practically memorized word for word. I especially liked one thing you said about the way that your marriage with Emily was crafted in the Bob Newhart show. You said there was the perfect amount of tension, love, and respect to make that marriage feel real. We read those words and we realize so seldom is that balance correctly achieved elsewhere.
That pretty accurately describes the relationship that Emily and I had, and we had respect for each other, and she was independent, but at the same time dependent in a way on me and me on her.
Hmm. You say that in that show it's 85% the real Bob and 15% is TV Bob. In other words, we're mostly seeing you. Most of the time when we've seen you on television and film, is that about the right proportion?
Yes. My wife has always said, if the American public ever found out what you were really like, they would never show up. And of course, my response was, and we're going to keep that secret, aren't we? if we want to keep living the way we're living. So,
very good.
I tend to find humor in the... I tend to deal with misfortune humorously.
You also touch at one point about how one of the costs of fame is that you're not necessarily out and about in the grocery store aisles and so on like you once were. And of course, it's those real-life encounters which generated so much of your material.
Yeah, in a way, your success, which we're all trying to achieve, it kind of cuts you off from the source of your material. And it means you just have to work a little harder at developing your material and finding it.
Well, you seem to manage to do that. Of course, your later career has also included some dramatic acting, that marvelous run on ER, for instance. Do you hope to do more of that?
Yeah, I would love to, if given the right script. And I was highly complimented that John Wells thought that I was up to that role. That I always call that my first intentionally dramatic role. there have been other comedic roles I played that turned out to be tragic. That was the first intentionally dramatic role, and so not really based on what he had seen me do, but he just felt I could handle it, and I felt very complimented, and the writing was marvelous.
Well, and the folks who nominated you for an Emmy apparently thought you did a good job as well.
Yeah, apparently.
Very good. For all that you've given the American public, we thank you, and I thank you for writing this wonderful book. I shouldn't even be doing this. A pleasure to speak with you, Mr. Bob Newhart.
Thank you, Greg.